Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the Church today.
Hello and welcome to this edition of The Lutheran Inquisitor. I'm your host, John Ehlers. I'm pastor of Christ Lutheran Church, which is located in Orpington, Kent, a southeastern suburb of London. You can find out more about us on our Facebook page. Just go to Facebook.com/ Christ Lutheran Church UK, and you can see some of our live stream services or find out about what's going on in our congregation. I also serve as pastor of the Raynham Mission. We meet the first Sunday of each month at 3 p.m. in Raynham, Kent, at the Evangelical Free Church on Widmore Road. And if you live in Glasgow, why not come along to East Kilbride and go to St. Columbus every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. I know that you will receive a warm welcome, but if you don't live near any of these places, why not go to our website, lutheran.co.uk, click on the directory button, find the congregation closest to you, and go pay them a visit. I'd also like to thank you for your prayerful and your financial support of Lutheran Radio UK, for without your prayers, without your financial contributions, we wouldn't be able to carry on this ministry, and so we are very grateful to you for that. Today we'd like to welcome back to Lutheran Radio a good friend of ours, Dr. Christoph Barnbrock. He is the rector of the Hochschule, the seminary of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Germany, and he recently gave a paper at a conference in Latvia about equipping a future or equipping pastors for their future ministry. And so we want to have a little chat with him about that. Dr. Barnbrock, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
It's great to have you. Now, at this recent conference, you talked about equipping the office of the ministry for the church. Can you tell us a little bit about maybe why you chose that title and its importance for you, particularly as the rector of the Hochschule?
Actually, that's all about what we are doing here at the seminary, just to equip young people for their ministry in the congregations. And I think if theology is just doing some abstract stuff, then it's not really helpful. But the focus always has to be on what's happening in the congregations, in the ministry, in the service of pastors.
And you started your paper by looking at some biblical examples, some characters in the Bible and how they were educated. Is that a good place to start?
Definitely. Because it's really amazing. If you have a look in the Bible and you look for the ways how those people who were talking there and who are acting there, how they were equipped, then it's really kind of fascinating because you really meet lots of interesting people. For example, Moses, from whom it's said that he was slow of speech and tongue, or Jeremiah, who said when he was called, "Oh no, sorry, I'm not the right person for that. I do not know how to speak, for I'm only a youth." So there are lots of people we wouldn't probably have called into our ministries, but who were called by God into the ministry.
But at the same time, there seemed to be a number of folks who were actually quite well educated as well, weren't there?
That's right. Some are quite well educated. If you think of Paul, he's kind of one of the best educated persons in New Testament times in Israel. He's really a theological star, if you want to say it like this. And there are also some other people. I mean, if you have a look at Moses, even if he's not really rhetorical, very able, he still got probably a good education at Pharaoh's court.
And I find that God often uses some of those things that happen outside the church to really provide a wonderful education and background for us for our future work. Is that part of it as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you have people called into the ministry, for example, being a deacon who brings something with them from how they are, what they experienced, what they had done before, and they were picked and called into the ministry because of the abilities they already got.
And you mentioned that, and then you go on in your paper to talk about some of those passages in the New Testament which actually address that, like 1 Timothy. Again, can you maybe talk to us a little bit about what some of those qualities that they were looking for in the New Testament for deacons and presbyters and shepherds.
Yeah, it's really interesting, especially if you compare that to what we're doing in our education at the seminaries, because lots of the ideas which are described there are rather describing the person, that somebody is sober-minded, self-controlled, respectable, and you could almost say that the only thing is we teach in our theological education is the ability to teach, which is of course important, but obviously there are some more issues which are addressed in the New Testament texts.
So can we talk about a few more of those things that you say are addressed in the New Testament text?
Definitely. I think it's kind of the basic idea that faith and theology is nothing which is just an addition on a life which is as may be, but it is something which is shaping the whole life. The faith is shaping the whole life of a minister, of actually every Christian person. And so being nonviolent, to be gentle, to be not a lover of money, those are not things which are kind of doesn't matter at all, but are part of the existence of a Christian or of a minister, because the faith is shaping the whole life, the whole existence. And if the life contradicts what I'm teaching as a pastor, then it gets complicated.
So in your view, there seems to be more than just a pastor as an intellectual, or more than a pastor as a well-educated person. There needs to be good characteristics, we would say, the fruits of the Spirit that go along with that.
Yeah, definitely, and I think that is something you can also experience in the life of congregations. When there are conflicts between the congregation and a minister, it is often not a problem of theology that they disagree on what they believe, but often it's a problem of character, of things which are complicated on a communication basis. I think that's very close to what we experience even nowadays.
Unfortunately, I think you are too close to the mark there. But you then go on and you talk about Luther and the Lutheran confessions and how they address the education of pastors. I mean, could you maybe just give us a quick rundown of what's happening between the time of the New Testament and the time of the Reformation? And then what the Reformation did to educate its pastors.
Obviously, we have very different situations between the times of the first Christianity and the Reformation time, and we have Christianity in different areas, in different times, and they are not always the same. So we have some centers where you have quite a good education. You also have to think of the cloisters, and you have to think of the urban areas where you get better education for everybody and also for ministers. But you also have rural areas where you only get little education, and that doesn't change until Reformation time, actually. And that was actually something which was very astonishing for me when I thought about that, because I had in mind that Luther was teaching at the Wittenberg University and that he was changing quite a bit with his colleagues in the university system. And I always thought, hey, they really changed everything. And they had that by then, the educational standard we have right now. But it wasn't like that at all. I mean, Luther realized when he was doing his visits in Saxony that those pastors didn't know anything at all, and that there were horrible circumstances for the congregations, and that was the reason why he wrote the catechisms.
He wrote the catechisms to help improve that, but again, we have the picture of students flocking to Wittenberg to be educated by Luther, Melanchthon, and others. Or what kind of education did they receive, and how did that affect how they pastored the congregations they were sent out to?
I think it is obviously like that, that Wittenberg was by then a very important intellectual center of that time and for the theological life of the Protestant, for the evangelical churches. But we shouldn't think of that every minister really visited a university. But those were obviously rather the career guys who really wanted to become superintendents and bishops and wanted to serve in the urban areas. But the rural pastors often did not learn more than what they received as training in the Latin schools until 8th or 9th grade.
So we would say they really have no better than sort of in England an A-levels education or even maybe America junior high education.
Probably, yes. And actually they had a very practical approach in that aspect because they often said, hey, just go with somebody else who is already serving as a minister and look what he's doing. A little bit comparable to what we have in some of our churches with the vicarage. So where you learn by doing and where you learn by looking what somebody else is doing.
So these people were not sent out on their own immediately. They had to be, do their time, as it were, internships, vicarages, to not only to, I suppose, learn how to teach and preach, but also learn how a pastor operates when it comes to caring and visiting and sharing.
Exactly, at least in some cases. Probably there were also situations where they were just sent with what they had and they tried to figure out how to do it the best. I think there were some still challenging situations after Reformation time.
So you talk about those clergy who go to Wittenberg, to do their masters, their PhDs, to become teachers and leaders of the church. How did that happen? What did they have to do? What was their program of study, and how were they examined?
That's really interesting because obviously the professors of that time didn't change everything, but they moved on from that, what they received from the generations before them. And so a very basic level of studies was, first of all, to get into the liberal arts. So we would say to learn how to do things on a scientific level in an appropriate manner. So that was what they learned first, and especially for people like Melanchthon, it was really important to get the students into philosophy, into rhetoric, and other subjects, even not theological subjects, because he said, hey, that's important. If you don't know that, then you can't really be a good pastor either. So if sometimes today people say, hey, we only want to do theology and nothing else, then that is not really an approach of Reformation times, because already they said, hey, no, you have to know your theology very well to be a good pastor, but you still need some other skills.
Now, do the Lutheran confessions, do they have anything to say about pastors and the training of pastors?
Definitely. I mean, the first thing I already mentioned, that in the preface to the catechism, Luther says, oh, those circumstances I see right now are really horrible. He's talking about many pastors that are completely unskilled and incompetent teachers. So that is a pretty harsh word. But obviously there are also other pictures the confessions are drawing of how a pastor should work. And important is obviously the 28th article of the Augsburg Confession, where everything is focused very much of teaching the word. Teaching the word, that is the most important thing. And teaching the word in a broad sense, which also includes administering the sacraments, which are also connected to the word. So those is a important, this is an important focus. And I really think another important aspect is what the Formula of Concord is developing when it reflects on church orders. Because education in that time was regulated by church orders, and they said, hey, we really should not think that this is not important at all, but also what is ordered by human beings can help the church is built up. And so we all always should think about what helps that the church is built up and that we and we have helpful approaches to church life.
And over time, how did those helpful approaches to training pastors and church leaders develop, say, after Luther's death into the 17th and 18th centuries, and even into today, how we educate our pastors? Can you perhaps trace those fairly quickly for us and then give us an idea of whether you think those were good or bad developments?
Actually, things went on like that for quite a while. And if you think that right after Reformation time we have this horrible 30 years war, then you can imagine that education was not the most important issue in that time, but just living and somehow getting from one day to the next one. So it really took quite a while that the education got better and better. Interestingly, it is like that we have in specific situations specific demands. So we know of people who were called into the ministry in areas which were bordering to Roman Catholic areas, and then people said, hey, the pastors we need here must be very well educated so that nobody can say, oh, the Protestant preachers, they are so dumb, and the Roman Catholics, they are so well educated. So there's kind of a competition. So I found that very, very interesting that they have this competition idea as well. I think things changed mainly in the 18th and then in the 19th century, where we got more and more thoroughly organized theological education, and most of the pastors attended courses at a university. And the developments go on until today, where we have in most of the churches, at least in the Western world, the idea that a pastor has to be academically trained. That leads to the fact that people have to go for a long way. For example, in Germany, it takes about 10 years for a young person to start his training until he can serve in a congregation on his own. That's quite a long way to go. The advantage of that is that people are very well trained, and they are very well trained for the manifold challenges we are facing today in the 21st century. I think that is kind of important. And in a world in which all professions are pretty much specialized, it is probably something which is you can understand it very well that it is like that. But on the other hand, it makes it hard for some people to get through it. And it makes it hard for people who would like to start studying theology with 40 or 45, because they say, hey, if I have to study theology for 10 years, then I'm 55 and there's almost no time left to serve. So I really think it's a quite of a challenge for churches of our days to think about different approaches, how to equip people for the office of the ministry. And I think we only started to think about that, and I think in 10 years we probably will have a wider range of approaches to equip young people for the ministry.
Dr. Barnbrock, in your position as rector of the Hochschule in Oberursel, and as you train these pastors, what is it that you're looking for in a pastor? What is it that you think people in congregations are looking for in a pastor? And how can we help develop those things?
Yeah, I would name a couple of issues. The first one, and probably the most important one, is that a pastor should love as well God and his people. And both is important. I think if you don't love God, then you are not a pastor at all. And if you don't love the people who you are working with, then something is wrong as well. So this is probably the most important thing. The second one is, I really think that a good theological education is important, that you know how to read the Bible, that you understand what is written there, that you are able to read theological literature and have a critical approach. That means that you know what is helpful and what is not helpful. That would be a second issue. And then a third issue would be that pastors really should be able to do what they are supposed to do, so that they know how to preach, to know what a good sermon looks like, that they know how to deal with young people in confirmation class, that they know how to conduct the liturgy, so that they really have those very practical abilities, and not only being able to read books and say, hey, I'm the best theologian of the world, but that they are also able to do what they're supposed to do. Those would be the three most important issues I would like to name at that point.
And you spoke earlier about the character of the pastor being so important, particularly in New Testament writings. Are there ways you can see of us helping to develop character within young men studying for the ministry that can actually help them demonstrate the love of Christ in all that they do and preach and say and care as they look after their people?
Yeah, sure. But I don't think that is something which can really be taught at the seminaries. But I really think that only can be taught in the communion of Christians. So I think you'll learn that by looking to people who are believing as you are believing, and you see how they live their life of faith, and that you get, in the best sense of the world, get impressed by them, and that you learn from them. And obviously, as a seminary, we also are a spiritual community, and hopefully the students can learn the one or the other thing from us professors, as well as we can learn from them. But I think the most important thing is to learn from other Christian people. If I look back at my own education, I would say that I learned quite a bit from my parishioners of my congregation, when I dealt with them and I learned from them how they dealt with challenges in their life, how they told me, often in a friendly manner, what is helpful and what is not helpful. Those were the moments which really shaped my character as a pastor, I would say.
So it sounds like you're kind of advocating the old saying that character can be caught, not taught. And I've heard that said a number of times, and I think there's a lot of merit to that. Now, when you gave this paper, people were there from a number of different places from around Europe, and we've talked to people from around Africa and South America about this as well. I mean, we see education of pastors happening in a number of different ways. Can you perhaps comment about that, your thoughts on that, and is that a good thing, a bad thing, or should we try to work on some sort of at least minimal curriculum?
Obviously, it's always helpful to have kind of a minimum curriculum because then exchange would be much easier. And I think in our world, it is very helpful to exchange as well thoughts as people. So that would be helpful if it is possible. But I think we have to face the fact that people are living under very different conditions in this world. And the ideas of how to educate people are different in England, in Germany, and, for example, you mentioned it, in Africa. So when I talk to people who are working in Africa, I realize that often things are very different from what we are thinking about when we talk about education. I know it from the mission work in Mozambique that they are training people from the congregations. They are already serving in the congregations because they don't have pastors at all in their church. So the congregations send the people who already serve in their congregations to get a training, and they get a training and come back and serve in the congregations, and they go again to get another training. And so that is quite different. And I think it's important that we don't say, hey, it has to be always in the same way, but that we realize that conditions are different in different countries of the world, and that it's fine, and that it has to fit into the specific context we are talking about.
Now, Dr. Barnbrock, if someone would like to find out more about the Hochschule where you serve as rector, how can they do that?
Probably it would be the best to approach our internet presentation, our homepage. It is www.lthh.de, and there you find lots of information, and we would really be glad to welcome you. And that means that you are welcome to visit us as a congregation or as a single Christian person, just to step by and drink a cup of coffee with us. But also for young people who are studying theology, to be here for half a year or a year to study with us and to learn from us and give us the chance to learn from you. So you're very much welcome to come to Oberursel next to Frankfurt.
Dr. Christoph Barnbrock, God's richest blessings upon you and your colleagues at the Hochschule in Oberursel. Please pass on our greetings to many of them who we know well. And again, thank you for the work you do there. We appreciate your friendship. Stay safe, and God bless you in your work.
Stay safe as well, and thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.